six left, yes,
he whispered.
This is it. This is the way to the back door. Yes, here's the passage.
He peered in and shrank back.
But we dursn't go in, precious. No, we dursn't. Goblins is down there. Lots of goblins is. We smell them. Shh! What shall we do? Curse them and crush them. We must wait here, precious. Wait a bit and see.
So they came to a dead stop. Gollum had brought Bilbo to the way out after all. But Bilbo could not get in. There was Gollum sitting humped up right in the opening, and his eyes gleamed cold in his head as he swayed it from side to side between his knees. Bilbo crept away from the wall more quietly than a mouse, but Gollum stiffened at once and sniffed, and his eyes went green. He hissed softly but menacingly. He could not see the hobbit, but now he was on the alert, and he had other senses that the darkness had sharpened, hearing and smell. He seemed to be crouched right down with his flat hands splayed on the floor, and his head thrust out, nose almost to the stone. Though he was only a black shadow in the gleam of his own eyes, Bilbo could see or feel that he was tense as a bowstring, gathered for a spring. Bilbo almost stopped breathing and went stiff himself. He was desperate. He must get away out of this horrible darkness while he had any strength left. He must fight. He must stab the foul thing, put its eyes out, kill it. It meant to kill him. No, not a fair fight. He was invisible now. Gollum had no sword. Gollum had not actually threatened to kill him, or tried to yet. And he was miserable, alone, lost. A sudden understanding, a pity mixed with horror, welled up in Bilbo's heart. A glimpse of endless unmarked days without light or hope of betterment, hardstone, cold fish, sneaking and whispering, all these thoughts passed in a flash of a second. He trembled, and then, quite suddenly, in another flash, as if lifted by a new strength and resolve, he leapt. No great leap for a man, but a leap in the dark. Straight over Gollum's head he jumped, 7 feet forward and 3 in the air. Indeed, had he known it, he only just missed cracking his skull on the low arch of the passage. Gollum threw himself backwards and grabbed as the hobbit flew over him, but too late. His hands snapped on thin air, and Bilbo, falling fair on his sturdy feet, sped off down the new tunnel. He did not turn to see what Gollum was doing. There was a hissing and cursing almost at his heels at first. Then it stopped. All at once there came a blood-curdling shriek, filled with hatred and despair. Gollum was defeated. He dared go no further. He had lost his prey, and lost, too, the only thing he had ever cared for, his precious. The cry brought Bilbo's heart to his mouth, but still he held on. Now, faint as an echo, but menacing, the voice came behind.
Thief! 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 Baggins! We hate it! We hate it! We hate it forever!
Then there was a silence. But that, too, seemed menacing to Bilbo. If goblins are so near that he smelt them, he thought, then they'll have heard his shrieking and cursing.
careful now, or this way will lead you to worse things."
The passage was low and roughly made. It was not too difficult for the hobbit, except when, in spite of all care, he stubbed his poor toes again, several times, on nasty jagged stones in the floor. "A bit low for goblins, at least for the big ones," thought Bilbo, not knowing that even the big ones, the orcs of the mountains, go along at a great speed, stooping low with their hands almost on the ground. Soon the passage that had been sloping down began to go up again, and after a while it climbed steeply. That slowed Bilbo down. But at last the slope stopped. The passage turned a corner and dipped down again, and there, at the bottom of a short incline, he saw, filtering round another corner, a glimpse of light. Not red light, as of fire or lantern, but a pale, out-of-doors sort of light. Then Bilbo began to run, scuttling as fast as his legs would carry him. He turned the last corner and came suddenly right into an open space where the light, after all that time in the dark, seemed dazzlingly bright. Really, it was only a leak of sunshine in through a doorway, where a great door, a stone door, was left standing open. Bilbo blinked, and then suddenly he saw the goblins. Goblins in full armour with drawn swords sitting just inside the door, and watching it with wide eyes, and watching the passage that led to it. They were aroused, alert, ready for anything. They saw him sooner than he saw them. Yes, they saw him. Whether it was an accident, or a last trick of the ring before it took a new master, it was not on his finger. With yells of delight, the goblins rushed upon him. A pang of fear and loss, like an echo of Gollum's misery, smote Bilbo, and forgetting even to draw his sword, he stuck his hands into his pockets. And there was the ring still, in his left pocket, and it slipped on his finger. The goblins stopped short. They could not see a sign of him. He had vanished. They yelled twice as loud as before, but not so delightedly.
"Where is he?" they cried. "Go back up the passage," some shouted. "This way," some yelled. "That way," others yelled. "Look out for the door,"
bellowed the captain. Whistles blew, armour clashed, swords rattled. Goblins cursed and swore and ran hither and thither, falling over one another and getting very angry. There was a terrible outcry, to-do and disturbance. Bilbo was dreadfully frightened, but he had the sense to understand what had happened, and to sneak behind a big barrel which held drink for the goblin guards, and so get out of the way and avoid being bumped into, trampled to death, or caught by feel. "I must get to the door, I must get to the door," he kept on saying to himself, but it was a long time before he ventured to try. Then it was like a horrible game of blind man's buff. The place was full of goblins running about, and the poor little hobbit dodged this way and that, was knocked over by a goblin who could not make out what he had bumped into, scrambled away on all fours, slipped between the legs of the captain just in time, got up, and ran for the door. It was still ajar, but a goblin had pushed it nearly to. Bilbo struggled, but he could not move it. He tried to squeeze through the crack. He squeezed and squeezed, and he stuck. It was awful. His buttons had got wedged on the edge of the door and the doorpost. He could see outside into the open air. There were a few steps running down into a narrow valley between tall mountains. The sun came out from behind a cloud and shone bright on the outside of the door, but he could not get through. Suddenly one of the goblins inside shouted,
"There is a shadow by the door. Something is outside."
Bilbo's heart jumped into his mouth. He gave a terrific squirm, Buttons burst off in all directions. He was through, with a torn coat and waistcoat, leaping down the steps like a goat, while bewildered goblins were still picking up his nice brass buttons on the doorstep. Of course they soon came down after him, hooting and hallooing and hunting among the trees, but they don't like the sun. It makes their legs wobble and their heads giddy. They could not find Bilbo with the ring on, slipping in and out of the shadow of the trees, running quick and quiet, and keeping out of the sun. So soon they went back grumbling and cursing to guard the door. Bilbo had escaped. Chapter 6. Out of the frying pan into the fire. Bilbo had escaped the goblins, but he did not know where he was. He had lost hood, cloak, food, pony, his buttons and his friends. He wandered on and on till the sun began to sink westwards, behind the mountains. Their shadows fell across Bilbo's path, and he looked back. Then he looked forward, and could see before him only ridges and slopes falling towards lowlands and plains, glimpsed occasionally between the trees. "Good heavens!" he exclaimed. "I seem to have got right to the other side of the Misty Mountains, right to the edge of the land beyond. Where and oh where can Gandalf and the dwarves have got to? I only hope to goodness they are not still back there in the power of the goblins." He still wandered on, out of the little high valley, over its edge, and down the slopes beyond. But all the while a very uncomfortable thought was growing inside him. He wondered whether he ought not, now he had the magic ring, to go back into the horrible, horrible tunnels and look for his friends. He had just made up his mind that it was his duty, that he must turn back, and very miserable he felt about it, when he heard voices. He stopped and listened. It did not sound like goblins, so he crept forward carefully. He was on a stony path winding downwards, with a rocky wall on the left hand. On the other side the ground sloped away, and there were dells below the level of the path, overhung with bushes and low trees. In one of these dells under the bushes, people were talking. He crept still nearer, and suddenly he saw, peering between two big boulders, a head with a red hood on. It was Balin doing lookout. He could have clapped and shouted for joy, but he did not. He had still got the ring on, for fear of meeting something unexpected and unpleasant, and he saw that Balin was looking straight at him without noticing him. "I will give them all a surprise," he thought, as he crawled into the bushes at the edge of the dell. Gandalf was arguing with the dwarves. They were discussing all that had happened to them in the tunnels, and wondering and debating what they were to do now. The dwarves were grumbling, and Gandalf was saying that they could not possibly go on with their journey, leaving Mr. Baggins in the hands of the goblins, without trying to find out if he was alive or dead, and without trying to rescue him.
"After all, he is my friend," said the wizard, "and not a bad little chap. I feel responsible for him. I wish to goodness you had not lost him."
The dwarves wanted to know why he had ever been brought at all, why he could not stick to his friends and come along with them, and why the wizard had not chosen someone with more sense.
"He's been more trouble than you so far," said one. "If we've got to go back now into those abominable tunnels to look for him, then drat him, I say."
Gandalf answered angrily,
"I brought him, and I don't bring things that are of no use. Either you help me to look for him, or I go and leave you here to get out of the mess as best you can yourselves. If we can only find him again, you will thank me before all is over." Whatever did you want to go and drop him for, Dory?
You would have dropped him, said Dory, if a goblin had suddenly grabbed your leg from behind in the dark, tripped up your feet, and kicked you in the back.
Then why didn't you pick him up again?
Good heavens, can you ask? Goblins fighting and biting in the dark, everybody falling over bodies and hitting one another. You nearly chopped off my head with Glamdring, and Thorin was stabbing here and there and everywhere with Orcrist. All of a sudden you gave one of your blinding flashes, and we saw the goblins running back yelping. You shouted, "Follow me, everybody," and everybody ought to have followed. We thought everybody had. There was no time to count, as you know quite well, till we had dashed through the gate guards, out of the lower door, and helter-skelter down here. And here we are, without the burglar. Confusticate him.
And here's the burglar, said Bilbo, stepping down into the middle of them, and slipping off the ring. Bless me, how they jumped. Then they shouted with surprise and delight. Gandalf was as astonished as any of them, but probably more pleased than all the others. He called to Balin and told him what he thought of a lookout man who let people walk right into them like that without warning. It is a fact that Bilbo's reputation went up a very great deal with the dwarves after this. If they had still doubted that he was really a first-class burglar, in spite of Gandalf's words, they doubted no longer. Balin was the most puzzled of all, but everyone said it was a very clever bit of work. Indeed, Bilbo was so pleased with their praise that he just chuckled inside and said nothing whatever about the ring. And when they asked him how he did it, he said, "Oh, just crept along, you know, very carefully and quietly."
"Well, it is the first time that even a mouse has crept along carefully and quietly under my very nose and not been spotted," said Balin. "And I take off my hood to you," which he did. "Balin, at your service," he said.
"Your servant, Mr. Baggins," said Bilbo. Then they wanted to know all about his adventures after they had lost him. And he sat down and told them everything, except about the finding of the ring. Not just now, he thought. They were particularly interested in the riddle competition, and shuddered most appreciatively at his description of Gollum.
"And then I couldn't think of any other question with him sitting beside me," ended Bilbo. "So I said, 'What's in my pocket?' And he couldn't guess in three goes. So I said, 'What about your promise? Show me the way out.' But he came at me to kill me, and I ran and fell over, and he missed me in the dark. Then I followed him, because I heard him talking to himself. He thought I really knew the way out, and so he was making for it. And then he sat down in the entrance, and I couldn't get by. So I jumped over him and escaped, and ran down to the gate."
"What about the guards?" they asked. "Weren't there any?"
"Oh, yes, lots of them. I dodged them. I got stuck in the door, which was only open a crack, and I lost lots of buttons," he said sadly, looking at his torn clothes. "But I squeezed through all right, and here I am." The dwarves looked at him with quite a new respect when he talked about dodging guards, jumping over Gollum, and squeezing through, as if it was not very difficult or very alarming.
"What did I tell you?" said Gandalf, laughing. "Mr. Baggins has more about him than you guess."
He gave Bilbo a queer look from under his bushing eyebrows as he said this, and the hobbit wondered if he guessed at the part of his tale that he had left out. Then he had questions of his own to ask, for if Gandalf had explained it all by now to the dwarves, Bilbo had not heard it. He wanted to know how the wizard had turned up again, and where they had all got to now. The wizard, to tell the truth, never minded explaining his cleverness more than once,
So now he had told Bilbo that both he and Elrond had been well aware of the presence of evil goblins in that part of the mountains. But their main gate used to come out on a different pass, one more easy to travel by, so that they often caught people benighted near their gates. Evidently people had given up going that way, and the goblins must have opened their new entrance at the top of the pass the dwarves had taken quite recently, because it had been found quite safe up to now.
"I must see if I can't find a more or less decent giant to block it up again," said Gandalf, "or soon there'll be no getting over the mountains at all."
As soon as Gandalf had heard Bilbo's yell, he realized what had happened. In the flash which killed the goblins that were grabbing him, he had nipped inside the crack, just as it snapped to. He followed after the drivers and prisoners right to the edge of the great hall, and there he sat down and worked up the best magic he could in the shadows.
"A very ticklish business it was," he said. "Touch and go."
But, of course, Gandalf had made a special study of bewitchments with fire and lights. Even the Hobbit had never forgotten the magic fireworks of old Took's Midsummer Eve parties, as you remember. The rest we all know, except that Gandalf knew all about the back door, as the goblins called the lower gate, where Bilbo lost his buttons. As a matter of fact, it was well known to anybody who was acquainted with this part of the mountains, but it took a wizard to keep his head in the tunnels and guide them in the right direction.
"They made that gate ages ago," he said, "partly for a way of escape, if they needed one, partly as a way out into the lands beyond, where they still come in the dark and do great damage. They guard it always, and no one has ever managed to block it up." "They will guard it doubly after this," he laughed.
All the others laughed too. After all, they had lost a good deal, but they had killed the great goblin and a great many others besides, and they had all escaped, so they might be said to have had the best of it so far. But the wizard called them to their senses.
"We must be getting on at once, now we are a little rested," he said. "They will be out after us in hundreds when night comes on, and already shadows are lengthening. They can smell our footsteps for hours and hours after we have passed. We must be miles on before dusk. There will be a bit of moon, if it keeps fine, and that is lucky. Not that they mind the moon much, but it will give us a little light to steer by." "Oh, yes," he said in answer to more questions from the hobbit. "You lose track of time inside goblin tunnels. Today's Thursday, and it was Monday night or Tuesday morning that we were captured. We've gone miles and miles and come right down through the heart of the mountains, and we are now on the other side. Quite a short cut. But we are not at the point to which our pass would have brought us. We are too far to the north, and have some awkward country ahead. And we are still pretty high up. Let's get on."